Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times. Now with Goals.
Hello and welcome to The Game, the football podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Martotti. Now, a quick reminder, like every week, before we begin, you can catch the highlights from every Premier League game before anybody else, except for those people who are actually in the ground, usual disclaimer, simply by downloading the Times app to your smartphone. Now, in the studio this week to discuss the title run-in and other events, I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Alison Rudd. Down the line, it's Matt Hughes from his home in Richmond, and further afield from a mystery location, I'm told, not Rippendon this week, it's Ollie Kay.
Back from Coutinho, Saka. Oh, Gerrard stumbled. It could be a catastrophic error. Down the bar for Chelsea. Who scores? And in time, added on at the end of the first half. Time predominantly for Chelsea's time wasting. Barr scores the goal that could throw the title race wide open.
Let's get things rolling at Anfield, Liverpool and Chelsea. Ollie, this seemed pretty simple to me. If I'm Liverpool, I win this game and I pretty much have the title in hand. Instead, it didn't quite go to plan, and so much of the attention has focused, as ever, on Jose Mourinho and his approach to the match. So, could Brendan have done something different?
Fairly early in the game, really, that things weren't shaping up as Rodgers and Liverpool would have wanted them to. I mean, people might say it was only one slip that changed it, but I thought Liverpool never really found their normal rhythm, never really found their normal style and speed, and I think Chelsea stifled them very well. So, I guess Rodgers would have looked to his bench and thought, well, Sturridge can only give me 30, 35 minutes because he's not fully fit. And then beyond that, what has he got? It is a weak squad. He's got Aspas, Alberto, players who I don't think will be there next season. He's not got the strength and depth that other teams have. And I think it probably exposes the weakness he's got in a squad. And I think they also missed Jordan Henderson, which would have, he is somebody that would certainly have given them something different.
I just want to talk about the incidents. I'll be in a total minority here. I thought that Ashley Cole on Luis Suarez relatively early on. I thought Ashley Cole was actually pretty lucky there, and equally flip side the Flanagan handball. When your arm's that far away from your body, you're taking a chance.
Yeah, I actually agree with you on both those counts. I think Ashley Cole should have been booked, could have been sent off. It looked more clumsy than malicious, but he certainly should have been punished, and you have seen referees show red cards for that, so he was a bit fortunate. And again, Flanagan, you put your hand up in the area or out in the area and the ball strikes your hand, you can't have a problem. So both I didn't think the ref had a great game full stop, to be honest. I think he should have been far quicker to sort of clamp down on Chelsea's time wasting and show a yellow card to that. I mean, putting a booking in the 92nd minute was utterly futile and pointless. You can say it's part of the game and it's a tactic, but it's not a tactic we should encourage or indulge in the way that it was yesterday. Really, if you saw, because it's such a big high stakes game and there's tension, it's seen as legitimate. But if every football match involved the time wasting, what we saw yesterday, who would want to watch it?
As in, does Susie have a point there? Should the referee have done a better job at keeping things moving with the time wasting?
I thought he had a reasonable game, actually. Right from the off, he kept pointing at his watch really dramatically and letting the players know, don't worry, I am going to be adding on time. And I think that's the correct approach. Rather than booking someone straight away, you have to let all the players know that this is obviously part of your tactic, but if you persist, it's not going to get you anywhere because there will be lots of added time.
As
indeed
there
was.
But isn't it because, I mean...
Foolish.
This idea... I mean, sorry, I don't want to reopen the old real-time can of worms here, but no referee, unless somebody splits his head open on the pitch, is ever going to give more than 5 minutes of injury time. So it's like you can point your watch all you like, but you are not adding... You're not going to add the same number of time of minutes or seconds that's lost during the game. It's simply not going to happen. It's completely unscientific. It's just a guy saying, should I make it 3 minutes or 4 minutes, while he's right chasing after 22 men on the pitch and making sure they all behave. So I kind of think that's pointing to your watch and saying, I'm going to add minutes at the end, is... it's just not effective.
Yeah, but
and also the other thing is, it sounds daft, but time wasting is more about, it's about more than wasting the actual time, isn't it? It's about
breaking rhythm,
disrupting the flow, and breaking up the game, which clearly frustrated Liverpool yesterday. And while it is a legitimate tactic, I don't think it's one that we want to see, really.
And it's all about perception, because it only really becomes clear who's time wasting when you know who's got the match won. And in fact, you could argue, if the game had stayed 0-0, that would have benefited Liverpool. So, they could have easily decided to time waste and go for the draw. It's very early in the match. It's quite hard for the referee to decide, I know exactly what's going on here and who should be penalised.
I don't think it's often been more blatant and more obvious than that. I mean, you had Schwarzer taking an age over a goal kick in the first minute, and I know he's 41, but you'd expected him to get the ball into play quicker than that.
But do you not accept that that's difficult for a referee to penalise compared to in the final minute when a team is winning and he's obviously time wasting to protect the lead?
I don't think it was difficult. I think it was obvious and it was brought to his attention then, and he seemed to indicate that he was onto it. And yet he didn't. I think he booked Ashley Cole in about the 93rd minute, which was the only booking for time wasting. And it's the things that are available to a referee, which are the yellow card for time wasting and adding the time on. Well, as a sort of joint measure, they work. But when you don't show the yellow card, I think that plays into the time waste, into the hands of time wasting, because as Matt says, it's all about breaking the rhythm, and that was a very effective way of making sure that Liverpool weren't 2-0 up after 20 minutes, which they generally have been in their home games of late.
Also, I want to ask you about the way Chelsea approached this game, and I have my own views on it, but I don't want to influence everybody. So a lot of people criticised Mourinho for parking the bus. Brendan Rodgers talked, he didn't quite criticise him, but he did say that he parked two buses. Do you have a problem with it?
Do I have a problem with Mourinho's tactics?
With the way Mourinho approached this game, in terms of tactics and personnel?
Absolutely zero problem. I mean, Mourinho has had a dodgy season in terms of some of the things he's come out with, but I agree with him completely when he said that was a masterclass in defending. And a masterclass...
Who said that?
He said it was a masterclass.
About himself and his own team?
Yeah. I agree. I agree it was. And I think generally...
Who says that?
Generally...
This is a masterclass for a podcast.
Yes. The presenter is fantastic. Go ahead.
I think there is. It's, we so often overlook what a team do defensively and tactically and go, look at the goals. Look at the pace. Mourinho, he's got a crucial semi-final coming up. He has a batch of injuries. He goes, he only gets the 2-0 victory. I don't see how you can possibly say there was something wrong or immoral about what he did.
I think it's wrong, but I think we can probably draw a distinction between tactics and defensive discipline. Chelsea's defending and teamwork organisation was brilliant, and the players carried out the game plan very effectively. But I think to an extent, Rodgers is right. I don't think it's tactical genius to have 10 men in a, you know, nine men in the line and one centre forward, which is kind of what they did for parts of the game. That's not rewriting football. It's not a brilliant innovation. That's just very ultra defensive play. You play attack and defence in training every day. You know, school will do that, as Rogers said. What is brilliant is the players being able to do it effectively. So I think actually Chelsea's players deserve more credit than the manager, who basically stuck out a pretty very basic game plan, and they executed it brilliantly.
All right, we need to touch upon the run-in here, because I'm told that's what people are all very excited about. Now, if Liverpool and Manchester City win all their games, they finish level on points, and most likely, unless Liverpool put like 50 past Newcastle, which is entirely possible on the last day of the season, City have a substantial advantage. And it strikes me, City obviously have they have a game in hand. When I look at the run-ins of these two teams, I see two sort of obvious banana skins, one for each team, one being Everton away for City, and the other one being Palace away for Liverpool. With Palace, just because Liverpool do not match up well with Palace, who have a very different style of play. Which of those is the bigger banana skin? Which is the biggest potential pitfall, Husey?
Well, on paper, it's obviously Everton, because they are a better team. They're fifth and hope to be fourth. Probably won't quite make it. I think there might be another twist. I think it's a little bit too easy to see City as champions today. They've still got three games to play, and they have been inconsistent recently. It will help them if Silva comes back at the weekend, which I think he might. I think Liverpool will respond. I think Liverpool will win both their games. I think they'll beat Crystal Palace. It's, again, with hindsight, it's easy, but you could see yesterday coming, really. So I think it's down to whether City can win at Everton. I think that's the crucial game. Really. I think if City beat Everton, I think they'll win the league.
Chelsea, I mean, all it would take is for Liverpool and City to lose a match each, and then for Chelsea to win their two games, which do look very winnable, and it's Chelsea. Man, I
think the probabilities are kind of slim.
But it is slim because of the goal difference thing, and maybe that relates to what we talked about earlier about Chelsea's lack of attacking intent. It effectively loses them a point where goal difference is concerned. But it's not impossible that Chelsea would win it. I think most people would say it's going to be very tight between City and Liverpool, and City would probably be slight favourites to shade it on goal difference or otherwise. But I don't discount Chelsea. I think those two games that Liverpool and City have got, Palace away for Liverpool and City and Everton away in particular for Man City, I think those are two really, really tough games. And I would question the mental strength of both of those teams. What Liverpool have done over the past few months is amazing, but now that bubble has been burst, it's going to be difficult to bounce back from that. And City have shown even before now that you can't just assume that everything's going to be great with them. They've been in a position they've had things in their own hands before, and they've dropped points when they've been in that leading position, and they probably shouldn't do it again. But they've got a very, very, very tough game at Everton on Saturday.
Knocking it wide here to Ashley Young. United flowing forward again. Evra, Valencia, Mata on the line, and it's four. And once again, Manchester United have scored four goals against Norwich. What a day for Ryan Giggs.
Manchester United have a new manager, albeit an interim one, and albeit a guy who's been at the club for a very long time. Ollie, did you see anything different in United on the pitch and in their new manager?
Yes, it was a fluent performance. It was a attacking performance, and it was a performance full of confidence. I think those three things probably shape each other, really. I mean, I think the confidence and joy and lack of a sense of burden in their performance is probably what made the biggest difference. I mean, I think Moyes would probably look at that and say, well, that's exactly the way I've been trying to get them to play all season. And it is, really. They just didn't do it for him.
Well, I got to take you up there on that, because
okay,
he says, that's the way I've been trying to play all season. Well, yeah, you can do that if you're not playing Van Persie and if you leave Mata on the bench and you're playing against a side that are imploding, right? But, I mean, Moyes didn't do anything approaching that. He didn't play in that style. He didn't play with those. He didn't have Kagawa starting most of the time, right? I mean,
Kagawa has started games. Cleverley has started games. Rooney and Welbeck have started games together. It's not Moyes picked, 51 different teams in 51 games or something like that. And there were certainly lineups that were broadly similar to that one. I don't think anybody would have said over the previous few months that Tom Cleverley was the missing link, or even necessarily that dropping Mata was the way forward. I just think whoever he picked on Saturday, however he'd lined them up, they were going to get a much stronger reaction because they have been under a cloud all season. Some of it of their own making, some of it undoubtedly of the manager's making. And how many times have we seen it? You know, managers get sacked. Well, unpopular managers get sacked. Somebody else who they like comes in as a caretaker, and suddenly it's as if they've been released and they start playing proper football. And I think that's the biggest difference. I don't think anybody would say Giggs did exceptional things on the training ground that made the difference. I think the mere fact that he was not David Moyes and the fact that he was Ryan Giggs, I think probably is a far bigger factor than anything.
Hughie, I'm assuming at this stage there's nothing to learn here, nothing to see, because obviously he's not going to be the manager next season, right? He may be part of the coaching staff. There's only so much that he can actually do.
He's got a free pass, hasn't he, really? He's taken over at a time when the club are at the lowest point for 20 years. There's no pressure on him in terms of needing to get results for this season, because the only thing that they can achieve is the league, which isn't particularly great reward in any way. And most of the games are... certainly Norwich at home is very, very winnable, so he couldn't really lose. And we saw what we thought we'd see was confidence reflected, a performance that reflected this renewed confidence and unity within the club, which hasn't been there for a number of weeks, probably months. So Giggs didn't really have to do much to create that, really. It's dead cat bounce. His mind is gone, so we have an uplift.
Looking ahead, De Telegraaf in Holland comes out Saturday morning saying that Louis van Gaal has signed to be the next manager. I read in the papers that the smart money's on him, but it hasn't actually signed yet. Ali, I want to ask about this, because this is a club that hardly ever leaked much under Sir Alex. They were worried about leaks. They didn't like the way that the Moy stuff leaked out. The Telegraaf obviously aren't making all this up, which suggests to me that either the fact that he signed was leaked by Van Gaal's camp, in which case they're bringing in a leaky manager, or it was leaked by United, in which case whoever was doing the leaking before is still leaking. Which one is it?
I don't think the reports in the Telegraaf would be from Manchester United. I don't think they would.
So they're from Van Gaal or his camp?
People talk, don't they? You know,
yeah, but
it could be any one of a number of people, and you know,
to actually say that he has signed.
Well, I don't believe that he has signed, but
remember, Ruud Gullit had told us that he had signed for Spurs.
Yeah, no, I mean there are clearly people around Van Gaal who talk a lot, but to be honest, there are a lot of people at Man United who talk a lot at the moment. It's great for journalists. I'm not sure it's great for United.
Anybody, I've had my reservations about Van Gaal for many, and regular listeners know why. Anybody want to make an argument that this is a really, really good and clever appointment?
Not sure it's particularly clever, but if you look at the options, you can certainly make a case for him being the best available options. You look at United's sort of shortlist, the names that have been mentioned. Most of them are unavailable or unsuitable for various reasons. I mean, they're not going to get Pep or Jose. That's a non-starter. Probably not going to get Ancelotti. Simeone, he's done an amazing job at Atletico, but his football hasn't been great from what I've seen. Certainly wasn't very good last week. And his command of English isn't great. Van Gaal, he ticks most of the boxes. He's an authority figure, which is what they need after sort of leaky and unhappy dressing room. They've had the season under Moyes. He plays good football. He's got a track record of success wherever he's been.
Stop saying that! Stop saying that, Hughes. You cannot say that.
I can say that.
Okay, you're all right. You want to go there? You want to go? Each track record of success. Okay. He returns to Barcelona.
One title in three.
Okay, no.
The Champions League.
All right.
One game of winning the treble with Bayern Munich.
Very good. You know,
flip side, he had a couple of quiet years at Barcelona, and he fell out of the league in his last season at Bayern.
Okay.
Over a 20-year career, that's not bad, is it?
No, you said success wherever he's been. Okay.
Yeah. He went to Barcelona twice.
Uh-huh.
Once he did very well, second time he didn't.
Okay, so he leaves, he's in charge of Holland. He fails to get Holland to the 2002 World Cup. You guys crucified McLaren, making him seem like he was the Wally with the Brawley for failing to get England to the Euros. He failed to get Holland to the 2002 World Cup.
And it was time with the best points in Europe. So.
Sorry?
And he got them there this time in very impressive fashion.
It's a World Cup. There's got to be something seriously wrong with you if you're unable to qualify, okay? His return to Barcelona, they were nearly in the relegation zone when he was sacked. His first time around, he fell out with everybody. His second season at Bayern was an absolute car crash. And there's one quote which, if I were United, would just scare the heck out of me. Oh, sorry. Let me throw in. His return to Ajax when he cried upon his appointment and he read a poem. And then 8 months later, he resigned, citing personality differences after talking about how Ajax was his spiritual home and all this jazz. But there's one thing which gets me is when he talked about after leaving Bayern, he said, well, you know, we did very well the first year and then things became difficult. It was perhaps a little bit difficult for me because there were some very big personalities who were very powerful at the club and had been there a long time, which is obviously a veiled reference to Uli Hoeneß and Rummenigge and all that stuff. Gee, I wonder if there's anybody like that at Old Trafford, a guy who's been there maybe for three decades and has a big personality and is kind of in the background now. I mean,
yeah, but the big difference between Ferguson and the Munich legends is that he doesn't have a public role. He doesn't appear on TV during a game criticising the manager in the way that, you know, Beckenbauer has done to Guardiola this season. And in the way that, you know, Uli Hoeneß before he's in prison and Sammer, they're always doing press conferences and they're very public figures. Ferguson hasn't said anything all season and wouldn't do if Van Gaal came. So I think that's a sort of false parallels, really.
I don't think Holland are good, despite the fact that what Matt Hughes said about their record points total and all this stuff. I wipe my tuckus with that because it's World Cup qualifying, which is impossible to get wrong unless you're Van Gaal in 2001. There is a very real possibility that...
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
if he gets appointed before the World Cup, everybody and their mother, all your buddies in the English media, you'll go there. You'll put Van Gaal, the Holland manager, under a microscope. He goes to Brazil. He's in a group with Spain, who are, I think, a far better team. He's in a group with Chile, who I think are a far better team, and Australia, who maybe aren't that good, but can still give you a tough game. He's without Kevin Strootman. He might have a patched-up Robin van Persie. Imagine the pressure on him. Ooh, does he drop van Persie? Does he play van Persie? He'll manage van Persie next year. If everything goes wrong and they get knocked out in the first round, does it then become uphill because the media will just start drawing conclusions about him?
Or that players might start
to
conclusions, more importantly. But I think that just shows the folly of judging people on a World Cup. I think World Cups for players and for managers are not necessarily the great barometer of whether somebody's any good or not.
We both agree it's foolish, but people do that, right?
Well, people even less intelligent than us might do that. But it's when you talk about Van Gaal and the failures at Barcelona, you know, Barcelona second time round, the sort of eccentricities of Bayern Munich last time in his second season. I mean, this is the kind of thing that happens when a volatile top class coach travels a lot. I mean, Ferguson, you know, if he'd gone around, if he'd managed in Spain, managed in Germany, would it have been as brilliant as it was for the entirety of his time at Manchester United? Well, probably not. He would have had ups and downs. But I think the thing about Van Gaal is that it just seems to be, again, a bit of a personality-based appointment. And where we're seeing these days, we're seeing clubs do well at setting out a real technical vision for what they're trying to achieve as a club and, you know, go in a certain direction. It just seems like the decision-making process at United, both last summer and this summer, has been, well, we need a certain type of personality. I just don't get the impression that at United there is currently any great sort of technical vision, which makes me think people should look up your piece, Gab, on the director of football idea.
Yeah, it just seems to me so incredibly obvious. The only thing which makes me uncomfortable, and we know how the media works, right? Louis van Gaal he's basically been on a roadshow here in England for the last 6-7 months, right? He was Mourinho's guest at the some sort of football writers thing that I obviously wasn't invited to because I'm not a football member of the Football Writers Association because they won't have me. He's basically been very good about, you know, going and talking to people. Everybody made sure that he knew that Tottenham had spoken to him. And people are kind of like discovering him. Well, I don't understand why the discovery process with him has been, or understand why he should all of a sudden be the best option for Manchester United with all the negatives that come into it, with all the fact that his brand of football, I think, is actually quite different to the brand of football that Sir Alex played and which presumably Ryan Giggs or whoever you're grooming for the long-term future wants to bring in. All right, so the Professional Footballers Association released their Team of the Year. For those who don't know, it's this is basically the players. They go, they fill out ballots, they vote on this. Apparently they physically fill out ballots still. They don't actually do it by email. And they have to get their votes in ridiculously early because of some stupid logistical thing that I don't understand. So as a result, sometimes you get some unusual outcomes. I actually think the Team of the Year this season is fairly, the one the PFA came up with, is fairly reasonable. But we're going to make our own Team of the Year here. And the way we'll do it, we're going to follow the tradition that we laid out last year. We're going to go by position, and if we're all in agreement, we move on because there's nothing to discuss. If we have fervent disagreements, then we disagree fervently. And you've all made your teams of the year. Alison, I'll begin with you. Who's your goalkeeper?
Lloris. But that, you know.
No, there's no reason to discuss Lloris. Oh, okay. If they say Lloris too,
okay,
then you're good.
Okay.
I suspect they won't. Hughesy.
De Gea.
Ollie.
You could eat a cab, pizza check.
Okay, well, I had Marshall, so there you go. We're all.
I'm glad you did.
Why?
My second choice.
Is your second choice? Okay, so everybody else had Marshall as their second choice. So Marshall, it is. Lloris. Okay, fullbacks. Oh, and the PFA had Peter Cech as well. But then again, those poor souls like Ollie Kay have to submit their votes back in December. You're right back, Hughesy.
Zabaleta.
Alison?
Seamus. Young Seamus. What a season he's had. Irrefutable.
That would be Seamus Coleman. Ollie?
Definitely Seamus Coleman.
Yep, Seamus Coleman as well it is. I'm really the tiebreaker here. So it is Seamus Coleman at right back, which is exactly who the PFA voted for as well. Very good. You're thinking like footballers. Central partnership. Let's do two together here. Ollie, you can begin.
Cahill and the most astounding omission from the PFA award, John Terry.
Ooh. Hughesy?
I can't argue with that for a second.
Alison?
Cahill and Skirtle.
Skirtle? Interesting one. All right, well, Cahill's obviously unanimous. I actually really think that Curtis Davis played really well every single time I've seen him, but I don't see enough of his team to be able to comment on it, and it might just be the brilliant tactics of his manager. So just thought it might be nice to recognize an older English gentleman. But no, let's recognize a different older English gentleman, Cahill and Terry. It is. Left back, Alison.
Azpilicueta.
Who's really a right back. But
which makes it all the more amazing.
Exactly. Hughesy.
I've gone for Leighton Baines.
That's original.
Well, no.
No. Ollie?
Not Luke Shaw.
I've gone for Luke Shaw.
And I'll go for Luke Shaw as well, as do the players. So Luke Shaw it is.
I thought we were going to debate these things.
No, not if you're
this
wrong.
This is just a list. I'm sorry, listeners. This is incredibly dull.
Okay, if you would prefer, would you want to make your case for Azpilicueta?
Yeah, I don't. There are three obvious choices. I think Azpilicueta, Luke Shaw, and Leighton Baines for left back.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all very different, and I don't see why it doesn't come into the factor that Azpilicueta has been a regular all season at Chelsea. He's played out of position. He's really a right fullback. He's been often the only player that Mourinho has bothered to single out for praise. He's been incredibly consistent, apart from one game at Crystal Palace. He's kept Ashley Cole out of the team, and Ashley Cole, when he did come back in, showed that must have been really good in training, because he came back into the team and slotted in really well. That and the Chelsea defence has been what has been their thing this year. They've more or less defended exceptionally well. I don't. You know, that to me is a compelling reason to have him in the team. There are emotional reasons and factual reasons, and so I don't. Luke Shaw is all sort of, oh, he's promising. He's not really been that outstanding this season. It's just because we've surprised by him and by Southampton, isn't it?
This is why young English talent finds it so hard, because they have people like you, Alison, just pushing them down in favour of foreigners, and then you wonder why England don't win the World Cup.
I'm with Ali. I was kind of grappling for the anti-Luke Shaw candidate, and that's not just because I'm a kind of curmudgeonly Yorkshireman, although I am. He's going to be a top player, but I don't think he will go to the World Cup, and I don't think he should go to the World Cup. I think Baines and Cole will go, and therefore it seems a bit perverse to pick the third best English left-back as the best left-back in the country.
Exactly.
No love for Luke Shaw, but he is in our team, by the way.
Well, there you go.
Okay, why is he in the team? I mean, me and Matt have just explained why he shouldn't be.
Why? Well, I can give you my reasons for picking Luke
Shaw. Let's discuss one player at least.
Okay, over Azpilicueta. Azpilicueta is not a left back, and when he plays for Chelsea in that position, he plays in a purely defensive way. In the modern game, fullbacks, I think, are called to attack.
Have you seen his throw-in? Have you seen his throw-in?
Yeah,
that is very attacking.
Exactly. The Rory Delap argument. I think he's a fine right back. He's an attacking right back. And I think when he plays left back, he doesn't interpret the position in the way it's interpreted in the modern way. Luke Shaw goes up and down. I like Callum Chambers.
And can't defend that well. Yeah, you know, we're talking about a defender here.
What?
You're choosing a defender on the basis of how well he attacks and not how well he defends. Azpilicueta is solid as a defender.
He's not actually. He's really not when he plays
he
right
really
back.
Is.
No, and that's actually why he doesn't
actually,
play right.
He is.
No, that's why he doesn't play right back. If he did, the logical thing would be to play Branislav Ivanovic in the middle, but Mourinho won't do that because he feels that when he plays right back, his natural attacking instinct is such that he concedes defensively, whereas when he plays on the left, he doesn't have that problem because he's primarily a one-footed player.
Whereas, so next season he's going to play Torres at right back, is he?
Using his logic, yeah, probably. Well, he is he does offer a masterclass. Ollie, have they convinced you to change your vote?
No.
Okay, the majority wins.
No, it's 2-2.
What?
It's 2-2.
Yeah, but we've got the PFA as well, and they say Luke Shaw.
Okay, yeah, fine.
So there. All right, your two central midfielders, Ollie.
Touré and, despite Sunday, Steven Gerrard.
Alisson?
Gerrard and Yaya, absolutely. Yeah, no question.
Okay, just thought because with Yaya not getting the credit he deserves and being African, I thought you might want to choose somebody else.
No, he's a fantastic player.
Husey?
Yeah, I was toying with trying to put Ramsey in there, but you can't pick a man for 4 months. If he'd sustained it all season, then he'd been there, thereabouts. But Gerrard and Touré.
Yeah, so it's Gerrard and Touré. The PFA agree. I do feel kind of bad for Aaron Ramsey, though. I'm assuming everybody has Eden Hazard. Does anybody not have Eden Hazard?
Well, it's a correct assumption in my case, but he wasn't a shoo-in by any means. There are a lot of very, very good attacking players, and he was one of the last names on my team sheet.
Was he? You had Lallana in there first? Because
No. I had Hazard ahead of Lallana.
Well, interesting.
And I had David Silva.
Okay. Alison?
It seems odd not to have David Silva, but I don't think he played enough. That's all. That's the only reason I would have. I would get Hazard and Lallana.
Husey?
I have both Hazard and Lallana, and Aguero to complete the triangle.
We have Aguero with our strikers, so tell him to be patient for a minute there.
I'm playing 4-4-2 because I'm not the PFA.
It's kind of brilliant that the ballot papers do go out with four defenders, four midfielders, two strikers. It's
sent out in 1988.
Exactly.
Looks like Hazard and Lallana. It is the PFA in their wisdom agree up front. Husey, Suarez and Aguero. You said
yeah. I mean, you make a pretty strong case for Sturridge, and Aguero has obviously missed key periods through injury, but when he's been fit and playing well, he's been outstanding. And ultimately, if you're picking a dream team, I'd rather have Sergio Aguero than Daniel Sturridge in it any day of the week.
Alison?
Yeah, no, Suarez. It's a shame we're saying this when he had his only poor game of the season, really, on Sunday. But yeah, Suarez. And I'm going to go for a totally, totally emotional, sympathetic vote, and Jay Rodriguez, bless him.
I'll go for Suarez and Sturridge. Aguero is a better player. I would rather Aguero was English and Sturridge was Argentinian, but I think Sturridge has had a brilliant season. And Suarez and Sturridge.
Well, I'm going to humbly go out and say Aguero. Luis Suarez, of course, wins the PFA Player of the Year. Not much surprise. Eden Hazard wins the Young Player of the Year. Now, I know they do this by age, but Ollie, should you maybe like go and tell your friends at the PFA that it's kind of stupid to have this guy win the Young Player of the Year when he was twice voted Player of the Year in France, the real one, three times Young Player of the Year in France? Just because maybe they should have like Young Player of the Year be like sort of, you know, your first or second season or third season maybe as a regular rather than just doing it by age? Or am I completely wrong here?
No, you're completely right.
And there's nothing young about him apart from his age.
No, exactly. And you know, he's 23, Sturridge is 24. That is not young in football terms anymore, if indeed it ever was. I mean, people always think, oh, well, players peak when they're 27, 28, 29. Well, I think that's a myth, really. I think a lot of players are at their best at that type of age. And it's. I mean, you look at a lot of the winners of recent years and they have been, of the PFA main award, and they've been 22, 23, 24. So it's ludicrous that I think Gareth Bale won the Young Player of the Year last year, did he? Or have I got that wrong?
He won all three at the same time, didn't he? Yeah.
So he won the Young Player of the Year after having already won the PFA Main Player of the Year 2 years earlier. Is that right? Something like that. James Milner won it, the Young Player of the Year, at 24 in, I think, was it his end of his eighth season as a pro? It's ridiculous, and it should be an under 21 award.
Yeah, and that way Luke Shaw could win it, even though Alisson clearly hates him.
I didn't hate him, but then James Ward-Prowse would win it.
James Ward-Prowse,
James
come
Ward-Prowse,
on.
Come on.
Seriously. Come on. Come on.
Time for some quick hits. Manchester City buoyed by the good news from Anfield rollover Palace, with Yaya Touré scoring one and assisting on the other. Husey, Yaya has complained that being African means he's somewhat underappreciated. We haven't had your take on this.
Well, it's barely worth commenting on because it's total nonsense. The most fated striker in the Premier League the last 10 years also happens to be African, also happens to be Ivorian, Didier Drogba. Yaya Touré just needs to improve his PR.
Ooh. Antelin Alcaraz has a nightmare as Everton are beaten at Southampton 2-0. Ollie, is this the day their run on fourth place ended?
Probably. I mean, we look at Arsenal's remaining fixtures and you would expect them to, maybe our listeners will know otherwise by the time they hear this, but I would expect them to beat Newcastle and I would expect them to pick up points after that and just about edge Everton out. And it's a real shame from Everton's point of view because I think the quality of their play and what they've done over the course of the season really deserves it.
West Brom get a massive 3 points against West Ham. Alisson, it's 15 points from 13 games for Uncle Pepe Mel, 20 from 22 for his predecessors, who everybody liked. Time for the best novelist among Premier League managers, no disrespect to Steve Bruce intended, to get some credit here?
Yeah, probably. For odd reasons, though. I mean, Pepe Mel came in and sort of looked perplexed almost from the first day. Tried English, gave up English. He's had, there's been spats. Morrison and Berahino came to blows.
That's Pepe Mel's fault.
No, but I mean, these are the things he's had to deal with. These are things he's had to deal with. And there's been constant rumours that it's a short term appointment and maybe the powers that be thought it might be a bit of a mistake. As you said, he took over from someone who was respected and no one could quite understand why he was given the boot so early. Given all that, it did look like a team about to implode, but he's managed to get them playing better and they will escape relegation, and given all those circumstances that's the best he could have done.
Well done, Pepe Mel. Then John Joshelvey scores one, sets up another two, and Swansea cruise to a 4-1 pounding of Villa. Hughesy, how far away is Shelvey from the next level, the one with the three lines on it, and are Swansea officially safe?
I think he might get in a few squads, but if it was me at home, still quite far away. He gives the ball away far too often, and if he was playing at the top level, he'd be sent off after half an hour in nearly every game because he gives away so many needless free kicks and he's too slow. So to play centre midfield at the top level, you've got to be much smarter. So he's not for me.
Sunderland stomp all over Cardiff 4-1, and Gus Poyet's army still believe. Of course, it team with three Italians in it will stay up, and I won't mention Dossena. Ollie, are they going to do it? And if it's at the expense of Cardiff, will you still blame that nice Mr. Tan?
I think they are going to stay up. If you look at their final two home games, West Brom at home, Swansea at home, I think they'll win one of those. And I think that will probably be enough because I don't see Norwich and Cardiff making up the deficit. And will I still blame Vincent Tan? Almost entirely, yeah. I think he made an idiotic decision. Well, he's made a series of idiotic decisions, but the one to get rid of Melky Mackay and to bring in a guy who has no experience of managing in the Premier League was daft. I mean, Cardiff, first half of the season, first third of the season, before everything's started to unravel behind the scenes, were extremely good defensively, even in the bigger matches against the better teams. And the way they've leaked goals ever since is, you know, speaks of a team that is no longer organised, no longer tactically focused at all, and it's unravelled as everybody thought it would once he sacked Mackay.
Fulham squandered a 2-goal lead against Hull, a side that may as well be on holiday at this stage. Alisson, you were there. How angry is Mr. Magath likely to be, or is he all on his best behaviour?
Well, Felix said he wasn't angry. He made that very clear. I mean, he's trying his best
to be nice,
to apply every single approach. He has tightened up, you know, club rules. You'll have to be on time for meals and no mobile phones out and all that sort of hardline stuff. But I think he took them out for afternoon tea as well, and he gives them days off if they win. He's tried nice guy, tough guy, nice guy. He's tried them all. But he's just baffled by it. He inherited a team with a dreadful defensive record and they have not been able to improve it. All they had to do against Hull, they scored two fantastic goals in a 3-minute spell, was then, you know, lock it out, and they just didn't seem to know how to do it. And they've got two games left in which to make it work. She said, her voice cracking.
Since you've developed a certain kind of fondness for...
They're round the corner.
For the cottagers.
They're round the corner from where I live, and my son was there, and he wouldn't speak to me. Oh, it gets very upsetting in our house. Okay, Gab, question for you. The marvellous Ajax have won another Dutch title, Frank de Boer doing the business this time around. So what's so special this time?
Four straight titles by one manager, which is something that has only happened, I think, half a dozen times in a major European league. And De Boer's done it while basically losing his best players year after year and kind of continually rebuilding. Now, he's a pretty modest guy, and he's pointed out that, oh, but I'm at Ajax. I've got this wonderful support staff. I have a director of football. I have all these people providing input. I've got all these young players coming through. But I think it's still quite a feat. The flip side is Ajax still stink it up every time they go and play in Europe. And I'm increasingly wondering that maybe that's kind of a structural problem with the Dutch league, because the football there is so different compared to anywhere else. All right, that's all we've got time for today. But many, many, many thanks to my guests, Alison Rudd, Matt Hughes, and, of course, Ollie Kay. Quick reminder, every single week you can catch all the Premier League action via the Times app. Please download it now. If you haven't done so already, check out thetimes.co.uk for some excellent writing from all of us here on the panel. And if you don't think it's excellent, want to disagree, reach out and tell us. We're all on Twitter. We all love feedback. Ollie Kay and myself are especially addicted to responding to nearly everybody who tweets in our general direction, which is very unhealthy, I might add. But that's the kind of addicts we are. We're going to be right back next week. Till then, bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
Hi, I'm Tim Montgomery, the presenter of another Times podcast from the opinion pages called Did You Read? It's the perfect weekly snapshot of some of the best writing in the newspaper. Find out more by heading to thetimes.co.uk/commentcentral and search Did You Read to subscribe on iTunes.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.